And a good Friday morning to you, and welcome into Darren Donick and Jace here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Darren McFarland, that's me. Willie Donick.
Good morning.
That's him. Jace McAbabe. McAbabe. Oh, that's right. He's not here. He's still on the beach. Hopefully he's not in the ocean. That's the Sharks' home. And hopefully he'll be back on Monday. But, yeah, Chase is out again today. We got a loaded show for you. We're excited about. We'll talk to Jim Wyatt in about 15 minutes. Titans Online. Get you ready for Titans Falcons. Forever Titan Chris Sanders in the second hour. We'll have a little You Just Made the List at noon. Pick six at one. Also may head down to Atlanta and check in. There's been a lot of stuff going on in Atlanta. I don't know if people saw the Georgia Tech thing yesterday. You know, you saw Kansas get. We haven't even brought up Kansas, all the stuff about their basketball team. Josh Pastner and Georgia Tech, they got hit pretty hard. It's like, what?
No postseason for them.
By the way, they weren't doing like you've been doing that, and that's what you get out of it. Have they even had postseason?
They haven't been going to the postseason.
They haven't been having postseason. So you've been doing that to be not getting into the NCAA tournament. Okay,
yeah,
I want to change your strategy.
If you that's a penalty I'd sign up for. If I don't think I'm going to make the postseason, I haven't been making the postseason, and the penalty is you can't go to the postseason. All right, I'll take that as opposed to other future penalties. It's a good way to cut your losses.
Yeah, that's a good point. Predators final preseason tilt tonight in Raleigh, North Carolina. 6:30 puck drop off pregame for you at 5:30. Everything heard right here on 102.5 The Game. Also, don't forget to tap that app, right? Hit that app.
I like your you came up with a new term. What was the you said Appster? What did he say the other day?
I don't remember either. It was really good.
Man, it was good. I feel like that's a marketing slogan.
Really?
It's such a great marketing slogan
that
I can't
none of us can remember. And I'm the one who said it. I can't even remember.
Option.
Yes.
Get some option.
Oh, yeah. So
I think that's the t-shirt.
Basically a blunder that turned into, hey, wait a minute, we can do something.
Exactly.
With that.
I think that's our bumper sticker. Get some option.
Either way.
Some game option.
Just.
Unlike, I didn't get much game action my freshman year for Vanderbilt basketball.
You did not. Or your sophomore year or your junior year.
Didn't you guys, I thought I had sat out a certain amount of games and you said.
Yeah, no.
You only played 14 games. Like, what?
Yeah.
What? And then I looked and
your stats were a little skewed.
Yeah,
in your
mind. Freshman year didn't go well.
Well, speaking of that, the Predators have recalled Eli Tolvanen, Rem Pitlick, Rashard Trenin, Josh Wilkins, Carrier, Jeremy Davies, and Ken Appleby from Milwaukee.
Ken Appleby.
So I guess they'll be in the lineup tonight in Raleigh.
I would imagine that Appleby.
So I guess the tune-up was last night or Wednesday night.
That appears to be the case, yeah.
Looks like those guys will be.
Which is weird because last year, the last preseason game was pretty much ones versus ones. It was like the real
thing.
Well,
but maybe this is basically the counter to. Oh, so you're going to bring nobody here? So fine, we'll bring, we'll bring our Milwaukee guys.
We'll look at our young guys over there.
Yeah. We'll bring our Milwaukee. Because what were you calling them? It was more like
the Charlotte Checkers.
There you go, Charlotte Checkers.
So the Admirals are coming in?
You said the Checkers are in town. I was like, oh, they like to check? No, they're the Charlotte Checkers. So maybe that's what that is. A little counter to, oh, fine. Okay. This is what we'll bring Milwaukee for our final preseason game. So there you go.
This is the first time they've done this. Now, a lot of teams are doing this around the league, but I'm not sure why. And it is interesting from the Predators' standpoint, just because since Peter Laviolette has been there, the last game has been sort of this is our squad, save for one or two final cuts. So I'm a little surprised they're doing this, but it makes some sense. You don't want to get anybody hurt in the last game, I guess, that maybe is trying to heal up 100% for next Thursday. So I guess they've seen what they want to see from most of these guys, but these guys will now augment the roster, and I'm sure the bubble guys will all be in there trying to fight for the last couple jobs.
So final preseason game this evening in Raleigh, and then it's on next Thursday, October 3rd, Bridgestone Arena, first game of the season at home against a division foe, the Minnesota Wild. First four games of the year at home. Thursday, Saturday, Tuesday, Thursday. Couple Eastern Conference teams, couple Western Conference teams. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's hard to believe. It is here, man. And by the way, October's here, just around the corner.
Remember last year, they got off to a really good start. They were on the road to start the year in New York.
Yes.
But remember, they went 13-3 out of the gate.
What were the first two, New York and Boston?
They won the first. No, they played the two New York teams.
Oh, that's right. Islanders, Rangers.
Yeah. Got off to an excellent start. The year before, they struggled out of the gate. Remember, they got and got blitzed in Boston and in Pittsburgh. So sometimes it doesn't even matter who you're playing. It's a weird thing. But those points that they banked in October last year came in handy, right? Because they went through some struggles. They had that patch of the season, about a quarter of the season, where they were missing four or five critical players. But they had banked a lot of points that they never really sweated, you know, dropping below the playoff line. And you don't take that for granted. You know, that's – I know there was a lot of times just drop out of the sky and pick a date on the calendar where things may not have seemed all that great. You're like, what's wrong? They haven't been winning. They're hurt, all these guys. Why can't they get – but you never feared that they weren't going to make the playoffs. Don't take that for granted, right? The St. Louis Blues, we know what their journey was like. Colorado Avalanche were fighting to get into the playoffs going into the last couple weeks of the season. They made it, and then all of a sudden now they're a team that everybody assumes is going to make the playoffs. But the ride can go different directions. So there was a lot of people, well, they're kind of living off of that great October they had. Well, yeah, because October counts. Those games are huge. You don't give those points back. So we'll see who's ready to go right out of the gate. It doesn't mean you're going to win the Stanley Cup, as we know, but getting to the playoffs, don't take that for granted.
Ask the
Blues. You got to get there.
If October counted last
year.
Yes,
it counted.
That hole they had to dig out of?
Yes.
That was because of October. It counted. And they were in a deep hole after the first month of the season. Last night, Packers fall at home to Philadelphia. We talked about how desperate Philadelphia was going to be last night. And sure enough, it played out. And early on, it looked like the Packers were going to seize control. When you look at Aaron Rodgers' stats, you're thinking, if we would have said yesterday on the show, okay, Aaron Rodgers is going to throw for over 400 yards and three touchdowns, and Packers are at home on Thursday Night Football, you're like, uh-oh, Eagles are 1-3. Not the case. He did all that, and the Eagles still won.
Eagles did a great job. They got a couple turnovers. They came up with a desperate effort. That was a great 1-2 performance. On the road, at Lambeau, backs to the wall, staring at 1-3 if you don't play a good game, and they rose to the challenge. They played really well. Had to hang on at the end. Not sure why they went for two on the one touchdown, which allowed Green Bay a couple of times to just have a touchdown, kick the extra point, and tie the game, which would have been the case had they punched it in at the end there, and then you're looking at overtime. But I want to see that from the Titans on Sunday, the desperate 1-2 performance. Now, you might get it from Atlanta, too. That's the thing. But if I'm an Eagle fan, I saw what I needed to see. Even if they had not pulled that game out, because Aaron Rodgers was one play away from sticking that thing in there and going to overtime. I don't know if you saw the end of the game, but it was bizarre because the player for the Eagles got hurt. They had to stop the game for a long time.
Scary.
Looked like just a hard shot to the head. Hopefully he's all right. I don't know if there's anything out there this morning, but that was scary. And so you have this huge time in the game. It's 2-minute warning, and it's game on the line, and then you got to stop the game for a good, 7 to 10 minutes, mm-hmm. easy. And then you resume, and you got to have it right there. And the guy that came in for the injured player broke up the pass. But one thing the Packers, and this is what Matt LaFleur is going to be staring at now, is one of the reasons they lost that game, couldn't run the ball.
Nope.
Could not get a nickel
Nothing.
On the road. I mean, on the ground. Aaron Rodgers was great, but if you can't run at all,
yeah,
that kind of makes it kind of tough.
Well, they had, Williams inactive. And Aaron Jones, it seems like the only thing he could really get going was screen passes. They do a lot of screens to Aaron Jones. If you have Aaron Jones in PPR, you probably loved it. But, yeah, you're right. They could not get anything going on the ground. Philadelphia, meanwhile, was able to run the ball.
Boy, they had effectively. They had two guys running the heck out of the ball, which made Carson Wentz's night
Howard
quite a
and
bit
Sanders.
Easier. Howard and Sanders both had a great night. There was the possession before the last possession where the Packers were down, what, first to goal on the one?
Yep.
And threw it four times.
Four times.
What?
I got to be honest. I don't understand that.
Matt LaFleur is going to be hearing.
Four times from the one.
Avante Maddox, the Eagles DB who got hurt late in the game, did tweet just over an hour ago, "Everything is going well. Appreciate the prayers and get well wishes. God is good."
I mean,
that was a nine.
He took a hard shot. It was right in that, what they say, and I don't know everything about concussions, but when you get it in the side of the head near the jaw, and there's that kind of a jolt, that is usually what really has everybody worried. And of course, they were worried about other things, too, spine and everything else.
And that's what happened on the Derek Barnett hit right at the beginning of the game, too.
Yeah. Another theme from last night, and maybe we'll come back to it.
I wonder if you're going where I wanted to go.
The pass interference.
Thank you.
The pass interference
challenges.
Are you
kidding me? Are you kidding me? I don't. We're back to goaltender interference. It's like, I don't get it. Whatever I think, it's going to be the opposite. I don't understand. Like, if that's not pass interference, I don't know what is. It's one thing live if you missed it, but you go look at it. We all watch the same replay. How do you come back and say the play on the field, the call on the field stands?
But you know
what? Give me a break.
This is part of the growing pains of putting this in. You heard Wes Durham yesterday saying, "What are we doing?"
Yep.
He was like, "Oh, I can't believe we're even doing this." I had to laugh last night. I tweeted right as they were having these. I saw two different ones, and it was this discussion was exactly. I was like, "This is so much like the NHL when they did the goaltender interference."
Yep.
The NFL is clearly trying to send a message. Please don't challenge. Please don't challenge unless your guy gets tackled or something.
Well,
just
I
don't
mean,
challenge.
That was a challenge.
Because they're trying
play.
To keep a lid on it. But what's happening is you're getting plays that are clearly the wrong call, but it's not so egregious that they want to try to keep a lid on it. But they're not going to be able to. You watch. It's going to evolve. It's going to change over time. There's going to be tons of discussion internally about this, and it's going to be a mess.
We'll come back with Jim Wyatt, TitansOnline.com. We'll get you ready for this matchup down in Atlanta against the Falcons. We'll do that with Jim next on ESPN 102.5, the game. Huge game down in Atlanta, Sunday, noon Central Time kickoff. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase, Darren McFarland, Willie Donick here with you on this Friday morning. Let's say hello and good morning to Jim Wyatt. Can find his work at TitansOnline.com. Jimmy, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Stepping out of the elevator, I thought I was going to lose you there with reception, and I'm in the clear, so we're in good shape here.
You are coming in loud and clear. Let's start with Delanie Walker's comments. First of all, let me ask you, I believe it was your question to put things in context. Was it your question?
No, you're right. Yeah, it was my question, and his answer certainly, I mean, spread like wildfire. I might, you know, video that
sure.
I put out on it had like 500,000 views on it last time I checked. And I will say this: I think a lot of what he said was maybe misportrayed, or I don't know, taken out of context, and maybe not portrayed the way he intended. Just because I think people saw that and thought, okay, he's calling out a bad culture in the Titans locker room. And
that's why I bring that
here.
Up, because when we talked about it, as you said, it went, you know, wildfire. But, you know, we were both going, okay, but so how was it asked? You know, get set up, because we weren't there. So that's why I'm asking you. You were there, and so I'd rather you walk us through it and our audience just so we can kind of understand it a little bit more.
Yeah, the question was, you know, in a 1-2 start, I mean, what's the fine line, or what's the balance like between, you know, being ticked off and calling out guys, or kind of taking an approach where you try to keep your sanity and humor about you going through the work week? You know, what's the balance like there? You know, calling guys out, but also being given constructive criticism and able to keep your sanity. And that's when he took it to, you know, it's a different NFL today, and it was more about the league, and I think really more about body, to be honest with you. I mean, it wasn't about guys in the locker room. I mean, Bernard Pollard, who I respect and think, you know, he was so fun to be around. I did a show with him when I worked at the Tennessean, and I know how outspoken he is. He kind of took my video and said, hey, they need a new owner. They need a new GM. They need to fire their head coach. This culture's terrible. And I noticed some other people kind of went down that road with that. But reality is he's talking about society in general. I mean, I think you can loop the Antonio Browns, you can loop Jalen Ramsey, you can loop a lot of stuff that's happened across the league into what he said, and I think a lot of guys would agree with him. I mean, especially the veterans who've been around here who have seen things change and know the locker room, and guys are different entering the league now. So it was more of a broader look at the way things are in society, and not as, you know, a lot less about what's going on inside the locker room at St. Thomas Sports Bar. I can tell you that.
And I said this on the show this week, and you've certainly been around him a lot more than me and slash us. Delaney's been here a while now, and he's a great guy. He's been, you know, he may end up going down. In fact, you're the perfect guy to ask since you've covered him from day one. I mean, he may be the best free agent signing they've ever had since they've been in Nashville. I think it's, I would say I'd probably lean toward that vote. They've had some good ones, but he may end up being the best, but I kind of sense this. This is before this. I'm going to say this on the front end. This is before this happened on, what was that, Wednesday afternoon. I've kind of sensed he's frustrated. Is it because he was being doubted again coming off an injury, his age, or is it just he's getting to that point in his career where he desperately wants to win? I don't know, but I've just sensed a little bit more frustration, kind of like after the Colts game. You know, I don't know. Don't ask me. Ask the coaches. You know, that was kind of out of left field. You'd have to say that's not Delaney Walker. So, do you sense that there's a little bit more extra frustration than in the past?
I really don't. I mean, I guess that's from being around him since he got here. I mean, he's the same guy, and he's always been the guy. You know, during the 2-14 or 3-13 seasons, you know, when this team was not winning games during that stretch, he's the guy you'd go to, and he would always let off steam then. So I don't notice a difference in him. I mean, I think he's honest. I mean, I think somebody responded to my video that I sent out with him to say he would make a terrible politician because he tells the truth. I mean, if you go to and that might have been Joe Dubin that said that, he was always good for a one-liner himself. So yeah. I will say that no, Delaney's gonna tell it like it is, and sometimes, you know, it's a lot of times it's really insightful, but I don't notice frustration. He hates losing, and I think he frustrated after that Colts game because his team continues to lose to the Colts, and he's can't figure out why in the world it keeps happening. So I think it was more frustration after losing a tough game. But as far as how Delaney has been, I don't notice anything different with him this year than he's always been.
Okay, fair enough. Jim Wyatt on the line with us. His work can be found at TitansOnline.com. Last night I thought was an awful display of the new rule, the pass interference. And I guess we talked about it this week from the Thursday night game, actually a lot on Friday's show, about we were a little surprised that there was an opportunity for Mike Vrabel to challenge that in the game, and we felt like it would have been rightfully so. Now, what they would have called, after, especially after Thursday and kind of what we've seen the first 3 weeks of the season, it's up in the air. It's 50-50 at best, even if we all get on the same page and say that's pass interference or that's not pass interference. But what did you make of that play, and were you surprised that there wasn't a challenge on that Thursday night game? And what was your opinion if you did see last night some of the calls that they didn't reverse that had a lot of us, like me, scratching my head going, I don't get it.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about the Logan Ryan interference
yes.
that they called. Yeah,
uh-huh.
I thought that was a terrible call. I mean, there's no question about that. But I do think that if they review, I mean, they slow these things down so much, and to be honest with you, just don't know what the heck they're going to do. And I think if you slow the Logan Ryan one down, even though I don't think it was pass interference for a second, I think if you slowed it down, you can see a little bit of contact there, and they might have stuck with it. You know, I didn't watch the whole game last night, but I saw an interference call on the sideline where a guy was up in the receiver's, you know, face mask and all over the front of his body, and they, you know, didn't call it interference. I mean, so it's just hard to know what's getting called and what's not. And just when you think, okay, this is clear cut, they go the other way. So, I mean, I think it's a roll of the dice when you decide to challenge these things.
Yeah, well, they are clearly sending a message, and this is what Mike Vrabel has said adamantly. He's just listening to what they're saying. He said that we are not going to overturn the call on the field unless it is absolutely clear and obvious. Now, the problem is, I thought Logan Ryan's was clear and obvious, not pass interference. Last night, the guy who was face guarding and hit the guy, I thought that was clear and obvious. But what they're saying is it's got to be a crime. You know, it's got to be the level of the Saints-Rams deal to get an overturn. I was surprised to hear that they've actually overturned 7. But I do think it's going to involve, Jim. I think this discussion, and the more we see it, the more reps there are, is going to change how it's viewed. I think there will be internal discussions behind the scenes. So just having seen it in the NHL, I look for it to change slightly, a little bit here and there, evolve over time.
I would think so. I mean, because you got to get these things right, and I think there's got to be, you know, I think with increased scrutiny after some of these, that they'll be even more inclined to not miss them. But when that happens, I mean, again, some of those, you know, like the one last night, I was shocked that they didn't call that. And but that's what you're dealing with.
So, Jim, I was looking at your notes on TitansOnline.com, and you had an interesting conversation with Kevin Pamphiel, who's got to be, you know, that's tough, right? He knows he's not a guy that's been starting in the league for 10 years. This is a huge opportunity for him to play, and he's not physically able to play. That's a bummer. But that being said, what is the plan for right guard on Sunday?
I mean, Pamphiel was supposed to be – I mean, that's the reason he re-signed here this offseason, because he thought he had a great chance to be the starter, and he was supposed to be the starter. I mean, and Mike Vrabel said it himself, as the preseason wrapped up and you went to week one, he was the projected starting guard against the Browns, and he has a setback during the course of the week on a knee that had, you know, kind of been a little bit of an issue, but just really was full-blown. All of a sudden, you're going into the first week of the season, and you've got – Nate Davis, who was not ready to go because he missed so much time during training camp, so you end up having your third option in Jamil Douglas starting at right guard. And add that to the fact, you know, the line had to be shuffled with Lawan suspension, and Dennis Kelly has to move from an unfamiliar right, you know, to an unfamiliar left tackle spot after being familiar playing right tackle. So the whole thing's jumbled. Now you're getting close to having it back to the way it should have been, but you're a week away from getting Lawan back. And then at right guard, I think the question is whether or not, you know, Mike Vrabel feels like Nate Davis is ready to step in and play. And I think it's tough to think he's going to be able to go in and be the starter right out of the gate and be good from the get-go when you haven't had full practice weeks or partly and had very limited snaps even in the preseason. So I think the best case scenario for him and for the Titans is if you can find a way to get his feet wet a little bit and get him comfortable and then maybe turn it over to him. I don't know if it's going to be a situation where he's the starter and he's out there from the very beginning. And that's what they got to work through. So I'm not going to be shocked. I mean, I'm not going to be shocked at all if the starting five remains the same. And I think what you hope to do is to be able to get Nate Davis some work. I mean, in a perfect world, Nate Davis would have been able to go through the preseason. They get a huge lead in Cleveland in week one, and then you're able to get him some second half reps, and then maybe you can start to turn it over to him. But now, you know,
yeah,
you're faced with the question is, okay, can you just put him in there from the very beginning of a game and trust him? and I think that's a, I think that's kind of a big ask. I think you want to get him some work before you turn him loose completely.
You had a, I liked how you worded the headline here, is the mindset of Adoree Jackson. You think about this kid, he gets targeted a lot because he's on a team with a lot of veterans and talented people in the secondary, and people are looking around for matchups. What's our best matchup? Well, let's go after Jackson. So he knows there's going to be a lot of pressure on him. Plus, he's had the issues punt returning. That's a lot of mental challenges to try to get through. So where is his head right now? You talked to him this week.
Yeah, I mean, he's a great kid. I mean, if you're around him, too, I mean, he feels terrible. I mean, I felt bad for him talking to him because the subject just won't go away. That's what happens when you play a Thursday game and you right. lose and you make a bad play. Then you got to deal with it for 10 days. And so here I am talking to him the other day, you know, almost a week after that play happened, and he's still kicking himself and says, hey, it's not like I'm trying to mess up. I mean, he says he made a big mistake. He knows he hurt the team. He appreciates how his teammates have supported him. He appreciates how Mike Vrabel has continued to go back to the well. I mean, he's given Adoree every opportunity to create a spark and to kind of change the momentum and change the conversation with him. But, you know, Adoree's got to do it. And I think he's at the stage now where, you know, he realizes he needs to do better. You know, he's working hard to do better. And, you know, whether or not he's the returner on Sunday, you know, I guess we'll find out. I think Adam Humphries and Adoree both could be involved, but he's going to be out there in the defense, and he's just going to have to play well. And it's a tough receiving core to match up with. I don't think I see Adoree Jackson matched up with Julio Jones because of the size advantage, but no matter who he gets, he's still going to be, you know, draw a tough assignment like all these guys.
Last thing quickly, Jim, both teams have struggled getting to the quarterback, and I don't even know what the status is of Grady Jarrett, who is the best guy they've got on the other side of getting to the quarterback. He has two sacks. That leads the Falcons. In your opinion, how do you think this plays out? Who do you think is going to have better success getting to the quarterback, Titans or Falcons?
Well, yeah, you're right. I mean, I think they have just five sacks in the team, and I think Matt Ryan has been sacked only five times himself. So he gets the ball out. I mean, the Titans have played, and again, personnel's different, teams are different, but they faced Matt Ryan twice. I was just doing the math a minute ago right before I came on, and they faced him twice in his career. He's thrown the ball, I think, 70 times in those two games, 38 and 30, and he hasn't been sacked once because he gets the ball out. And the thing with them is, you know, they've receivers, you know, he likes to, he doesn't pat the ball back, but he stands back. He likes to let those guys catch it and make plays. So still, I think the Titans, even though it's sometimes tough to get to him, he was sacked over 40 times last year, you still got to pressure him and you still got to fluster him. You still got to get your hands up and bat down, balls down at the line of scrimmage, and you just can't let him sit back there and get comfortable. If you do, then he's going to pick you apart. So I don't know that I forecast this being a huge sack day for the Titans just because of their mindset and the way they approach things. But what it's got to be is it's got to be better as far as a protecting the quarterback standpoint. I mean, 17 sacks for Mariota in three games, nine last week. You're not going to win many games like that. So you better do a better job protecting the QB if you're going to try to win this game.
Jim, appreciate the visit. I know they got practice here in a bit, and then it's on to Atlanta. So thanks for doing this.
Okay, appreciate you. Have a good weekend.
You do the same. Jim Wyatt, TitansOnline.com, and we do appreciate him taking a few minutes out. Practice field, or they will hit the practice field in about 20, 25 minutes to get their final preparations in for the game against the Falcons. Don't forget pick six coming up at 1 o'clock. More coming on the other side of Darren Donick and Chase. ESPN 102.5 The Game and The Game Nashville app. We'll have Forever Titan on Chris Sanders coming up to kick off the second hour of the program. That is going to be one of our pick six questions. Who's going to have success getting to the quarterback? Both teams have not done a good job of that. So who is going to have success?
It's a big, big question. In listening to Jim, it does sound like it's going to be Jamil Douglas again.
Yeah.
At right guard, and you know, can he get the job done? This might be his last week. You hope it's the last
My
week
goodness.
They have to use him, right?
I just wonder, what does every week mean? Like, what? Where is Nate Davis in all this? Like, how far is he really? I mean, do they?
It's hard.
Are they trying to protect him because they just they don't they think he is miles away? Is he getting close? I mean, obviously, there's a trust.
Oh, he's
they
getting
have to
close.
Be,
he's
they
getting
have to
close.
Be able to trust him.
He's getting close.
We always talk about players earning the coach's trust. I'd say right now they don't trust him if he's not out there.
A rookie thrown in there in week four, it's hard to trust, right?
But is there ever a good time in the NFL?
Jim, no. And they're desperate, right? They're not getting anything close to – and I feel bad for Jamel Douglas because he is at best the fourth option, right? He is the fourth string guy that they would use there. But it is, as Jim sort of documented when we just had him on, the evolution of how they got to Jamel Douglas. It's not like they came into the season saying, yeah, we're going to use Jamel Douglas for the first four games. They did not have that plan. Plan A was that Nate Davis was going to be drafted. He was going to win the job and be ready to go week one. That didn't happen. He got hurt. He hasn't played at all. Didn't practice at all. That was option one. So that went out the window. Okay, well, we have Kevin Pamphile. We signed him in the offseason. We made sure that he stayed. He wants to stay. He sees an opportunity to play. Well, he's hurt. He can't play. So now you're down to option three. Well, you got the ever-ready Dennis Kelly. Dennis Kelly, we can plug him in anywhere. That's an option there. We'll just plug him in there if that's the case. Nope. Got to use him because Taylor Lewan had his issue, and he's out for four games, performance-enhancing drugs. Okay. Who we got now? Good luck trying to figure out. So who is four deep? Alabama, I don't think, is even four deep at right guard. Right? Who's their fourth string right guard? You might see a little bit of a drop-off. Even if Alabama had to go to their fourth string guard. It's probably a five-star recruit. Right?
Well, if you,
but in the NFL, we only have 53
night,
guys.
You learn that they're figuring out what their depth is like, and they found a way to win.
But fourth string. I'm talking about fourth string.
Yeah, but they lost guys again last night. I mean, bodies just keep falling for them.
Right. And also, the good thing about the Titans is that they're not riddled with injuries in other areas of the roster yet, which is why it's been disappointing that they have not gotten another win there. But they are where they are, can't do anything about it. They're going to have to soldier through this game, maybe, with Douglas one more time, or if Nate Davis can give – I have just not seen a game plan where a guy comes in and they say, like, okay, we're going to get him some work. We're going to work him in. It's just not how the NFL rolls mostly. I'll be really curious to watch if they try to use both. But my gut feeling is if they feel like Davis is ready, you put him in there, or you just go with Douglas until he doesn't do the job, and then you just go with Davis and say he can't do any worse. So it's one or the other, I think. I don't like the idea of, well, we're going to mix. We're going to try to work Davis in there. That's hard to do, I think, with all the calls and all the stunts and everything the teams try to throw at you. And it's so critical that the offense does well this week. Wouldn't it be nice to have one of those Derrick Henry games where he just is the reason he just picks up the team and makes everything easier for everybody?
That should be their advantage, right?
I hope so.
I mean, I just don't feel – Freeman is not the same guy a couple years ago. He's just
hasn't
not.
Been.
They
hasn't
have
been.
Not been able to run the ball with him
and they
like
don't
he
have
was a
the
couple
committee.
Years ago. And he's always hurt, right? Because they lost Tevin Coleman
right.
to San Francisco.
They had a great mix of
Which, by
of
the
guys.
Way, has been hurt all season,
True.
Basically.
And Ito Smith is hurt, the guy that
yes.
was Coleman's replacement, who mm-hmm. wasn't bad
yep.
before. Now he can't play. So
the year they went to the Super Bowl, it was because they could run the ball so well, and they had about three guys
absolutely.
That they could use.
So you have to hope, if you're Dean Pease, that you can make them one-dimensional without having to try too hard, right? And then it's about, can you handle the strength of their team, and that's their array of weapons.
The other thing is, we talked to Wes Durham, who's the play-by-play voice of the Falcons yesterday on the show. The other thing is, how much does losing Neal, if you remember, he said he's a Pro Bowl safety
yeah.
for them. And last year, unfortunately, they lost him to ACL at the beginning of the year. And now in week three last week in Indy, they lose him to, what was it?
Achilles.
He's done for the year. So 2 years in a row, they've lost their Pro Bowl safety. How much? And Wes was painting the picture like that is a huge loss for that secondary for the Falcons. So how much does that hurt them? Last year, if you noticed, they did not have a good year. Their defense wasn't very good, so it looked like it did affect them. I wonder how much Neal not being in there this week against the Titans, how much that will affect them. What can the Titans do to use that to their advantage?
I think this is a game where if you could protect the quarterback a little bit better, you got to hope that now, because you have a variety of guys who can make a play with your receiving core, that you could take advantage of a matchup like that, whether it's Walker or Humphreys or your wideouts. Corey Davis. I got to believe there's matchups that they like on film there, especially with Neal out. You have to try to exploit that. Just like as we were saying about Adoree Jackson, right? Because they're deep in the secondary, Adoree Jackson is not bad, but he's just not as good as the other guys, and so he gets picked on. And he's got to play better, but he's better than I think a lot of, you know, fifth and sixth defensive backs are. So hopefully that matchup is good for the Titans because they are equipped to handle a team like the Falcons who have a lot of wideouts. And, of course, it all starts with trying to keep Jones from having 200 yards. You know, you have, because if you don't do anything against him, he's the kind of guy that can win the game by himself. He can have 11 catches for 180 yards and three touchdowns.
We'll come back and wrap up the first hour of Darren Donick and Chase next. We'll actually get a couple perspectives in the second hour. We'll talk to Forever Titan Chris Sanders. And we'll also head down to the ATL and check in with Chris Tomino, who can certainly talk the Falcons. Pick six coming up at 1 o'clock. You just made the list at noon, so a lot more things on tap here on Darren, Donick, and Chase on this Friday morning. So we will also have a question about Julio Jones, and that is the big question. Because Julio Jones, the last 2 weeks, has looked pretty darn good. In the loss to Indianapolis, he had 128 yards receiving and a touchdown. In the victory over the Eagles, he had 106 yards and two touchdowns. We know how dynamic he can be. Minnesota was fantastic against him in the first game of the season. He had 11 targets. He only caught six balls, but 11 targets for 31 yards. Now, he did get a touchdown, but 11 targets for 31 yards, and of course, Minnesota won the game pretty easily. The question is, not too many teams are going to be able to pull that off. You know what Julio Jones is about, and more times than not, he's going to get his, and even if he gets his, you have to find a way to still get the victory, right? Because it's going to be difficult. If your game plan is to go in and shut down Julio Jones, probably not a good game plan.
Probably not. This is where I first started learning about this. And I'm going to make a way back reference. This is a way back. Allen Houston, great player, University of Tennessee. Coached by his dad.
Right?
Wade Houston. They weren't very good most of the time. They made the NIT a couple of times. Every time our team at Vanderbilt played Allen Houston, we knew that Allen Houston was going to have the green light. He was a great player. He was by far their best player. Our goal was not to keep Allen Houston under 20, 25 points. The guy played in the NBA for 10, 15 years. We knew he was going to score. But we talked about efficiency. We tried to make him work hard for his points. We tried not to foul him because he was an 85% free throw shooter. So our goal was not how many points he scored, but can we make it inefficient? Can we make him 6-for-19 from the field instead of, 6-for-8 or 15 free throws or 12-for-19 from the field. I think that's the attitude when you go against the Jones. Now, so far, Jones has been pretty efficient despite that game you were talking about. In the Football Outsiders, he's ranked 6th. They have gotten him the ball, and he has produced at a high rate. He's already got 4 touchdowns on the season. It doesn't look like he's lost a step at all. And he is one of the guys that – through the pains of reworking the contract and him trying to say, I'm one of the best at my position, I need to get paid in my prime, they have worked through that, right? He's done that twice, has he not? Reworked his contract or been signed to an extension to get the guaranteed money. They've managed that about as well as you can for that type of player. It hasn't gotten ugly like it has for plenty of other wide receivers. Do we even need to mention names?
Yeah. There's a list.
There is a list.
And
one in particular.
And it's not one or just
that I'm
two.
Sure you're thinking, I know who you're talking about. I know who you're talking about. But he seems to do okay. Now, the key for Atlanta, too, is how do we spread our money over the rest of the team? They're paying Matt Ryan a lot. You know, so it opens up weaknesses on the roster. That's what you have to exploit.
Well, they have Ridley on a rookie deal.
And he's banged up, right?
He's questionable.
That's another key question is what do they get from Ridley in this game?
And don't forget about Sanu. Don't sleep on him.
He is steady.
He will get, you know, he's going to get 6 or 7 targets in this game. That's what he does. Every game he gets 6 or 7 targets. So they are going to look at Sanu. So you better not just, you know, think, oh, we don't have to worry about him. He's the third option.
Ridley has caught 76% of the balls thrown his way. Sanu, I'm trying to look for him. They haven't actually targeted him as much as I thought. He has not been quite as good. But he's got 79% of the balls thrown his way. So it's weird. The interceptions have been noteworthy for Ryan, but overall the passing offense is very tough to stop with those three guys in particular. Then you throw in Hooper, the tight end, who's very good. So I think this is a great challenge for the Titans defense, but I think it's a matchup that they're equipped to handle better than a lot of teams because of their depth in the secondary. I'm looking for Hooper. Austin Hooper is the fourth most efficient tight end in the league right now, according to Football Outsiders.
He really slides under the radar.
He's caught 86% of the passes coming his way. 2 touchdowns. 177 yards. I mean, he's good.
By the way, Zach Ertz, 4 games in. He's a premier tight end in the league. Still hasn't found the end zone for the Eagles. But yet they're 2-2.
Well, they made up for it last night. A guy named Jordan Howard, 3 touchdowns last night. So sometimes you change teams. You don't know what you get from a guy. That was big for him. I mean, the last couple weeks, he started to fit in more. That's a good sign for the Eagles.
And the Falcons have brought back the ageless wonder kicker, Matt Bryant.
Unbelievable.
What is he, 44?
He's not quite as old as Vinatieri, but it's close, right? I think that's right. I think 44. How old was Gary Anderson the last year that when the Titans brought him back when Nedney got hurt? Remember?
Plucked him out of the water when he's fishing.
He was in the 40s.
He was about there, right?
I think he was.
About the same age.
That was the one bar face mask.
Yeah, and he won him a playoff game.
On the last play. That was awesome. I mean, I forget exactly how far that field goal was. It was like 47, 48 maybe.
And it was, yeah.
Wherever it was, he had about 1 yard to spare. It would not have been good from like 2 yards back.
Yeah, nope.
I mean, it just got over the crossbar.
And what is incredibly sad, if it wasn't for 2 years ago in Kansas City, that would be the last reference point of a Titans playoff victory.
But you know what? I'll bet you we could call Gary Anderson up. If he needed to hit from 35, he could still do it. I'll bet you.
Hey, David Akers.
I mean, he's probably, what's
David
he now,
David Akers
60?
Is in town.
Gary Anderson's probably 60. Now? Guarantee you.
Well, that was
35
03?
And in. I bet you he could still hit it.
Right? That was
03.
So yeah, 16 so years later, Gary Anderson is 60.
He's 60. Now, he can't hit from 60, but I guarantee you he can hit from 35 and in. He would be money. The guy he didn't even have to think.
No.
Like, he was the most, it was just boom. And that's how the best kickers are. They just shut their mind down, and it's just in. They
his
make
career,
it.
He was an 80% field goal kicker.
And that was because he was ahead of his time. He was 80% before the league average. Now, the league average now is over 80%.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you're not hitting 80%, they're calling around saying, we need to see if we can find somebody better.
23 years in the league. Gary Anderson.
Back then, for that era, 80% was ahead of the league average a lot.
Just 1 year here, though.
Yep. Called him up. That's a good Floyd Reese story.
Spent most of his time in Pittsburgh, obviously.
That's a good Floyd Reese story.
Oh, yeah.
Who can we find? Well, where is he? Well, he's fishing. Call him up!
We'll come back. Hour number 2 of Darren, Donick, and Chase. Right here on ESPN 102.5, The Game, The Game Nashville app.